rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Amanda L. Meredith presiding. All of our business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I am Judge Meredith. To my right is Judge Falvey, and to my left is Judge Lauer. We are here today in the matter of Justin Gray versus Dennis McDonough, docket number 223933. Will counsel, beginning with petitioner's counsel, please note your appearance for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor. Zachary Stolzman, petitioner. Coming at counsel's table is Abel Conahauer from the law firm Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Megan Kral and Lisa Timmers on behalf of the Secretary.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Counsel for the petitioner, do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
10 minutes, please, Your Honor.
So noted. Counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, Judge Meredith, Your Honors. And may it please the court. The court should grant this petition and order the board to adjudicate Mr. Gray's case. At the end of all the pleadings, the major question presented is whether the board is permitting other appellants and claimants to leapfrog over Mr. Gray without a valid reason. The answer to that question is yes. The Secretary concedes this. In favor of Mr. Gray's petition, pursuant to track factors 1, 4, and 6, there's no question anymore that hundreds of veterans have line-jumped Mr. Gray, ahead of Mr. Gray, and there's no question that his delay is going on to 4 years, the Board of Veterans Appeals, without so much as an assignment to a board member or an adjudication. The Secretary's latest pleading demonstrates that there are at least 50 cases that are unaccounted for that have gone ahead of Mr. Gray. 231 touch, 282 hearing cases, 14 AMA, 12 legacy appeal with an earlier docket number type cases, 4 hall cases, 82 special case teams, and 5 vacators, if my math is correct. The Secretary's explanation for this deviation from Congress's mandate to work cases in docket order is that this court allowed the board to do so in Ramsey. The Secretary's reliance on this case is misplaced. Mr. Gray has never argued for strict adherence to the docket order. He argues that VA must treat his December 2018 appeal the same as those similarly situated veterans with appeals through September 2019 who have already received a board decision. Ramsey is, in fact, remarkably different from this case. In Ramsey, the Secretary directed the board's chairman to stay adjudication of tinnitus claims while an appeal was pending at the Federal Circuit. The Secretary did so by public memorandum, making it clear that the stay was temporary and narrowly tailored. Far from the arbitrary deviation, the Secretary's counsel concedes in this case. Ramsey presented a reasonable department taking reasonable actions to most fairly adjudicate large numbers of board appeals. The leeway earned in Ramsey is unearned here. Because the track factors articulated from the Federal Circuit's case in Martin apply here, Mr. Gray urges this court to grant his petition, order the board to make a decision in this case in 45 days.
Counsel, as you know, two of the track factors, 3 and 5, deal with the particular circumstances of the veteran and how the particular veteran is impacted by the delay. Can you give us an idea of the personal circumstances of the veteran here in terms of financial situation, his age, his employment, sources of income?
I do know that he is employed and has a source of income. However, I do know that he does suffer from the conditions that he filed for service connection for. And I do know that it does, as a matter of law, meet the factors of human health and welfare. Whether he is as profoundly disabled as other veterans, he is not, but he does still meet the track factors 3 and 5 by matter of law.
In terms of the relief that you're requesting, VA has acknowledged they had policies that were allowing some veterans to jump in line ahead of Mr. Gray. VA says that they've now amended or changed all of those policies. So if we were to grant the writ, right, to go to the front of the line, why would he not then be jumping over people who are similarly situated, who are similarly harmed by the policies, or those who are appropriately now ahead of him in the queue. How is it not line jumping, given that VA has changed their policies?
That is a difficult question. That's a difficult question, given given how this is going to be done, and given frankly the unbelievably long delays at the Board of Veterans Appeals. It becomes difficult when comparing Mr. Gray to his actual peers. But Mr. Gray's is the case in front of you, and I don't know how many cases are similarly situated to Mr. Gray. I do know that Mr. Gray was jumped over these many several times, and regardless of the Secretary changing or amending his policies, I believe he's done so October 31st, according to the affidavit, if I'm correct about that. The fact of the matter is the damage was done while these programs were in fact out of docket order and not in compliance with 38 U.S.C. 7107, the damage was done during that time. And this court is dealing with Mr. Gray's case before it today. And I don't think that he would be line jumping, because what the board would be doing, theoretically, hopefully, is the board would be fixing the problem. And so they would go back into docket order. And so the people similarly situated, Mr. Gray, will get their decisions in a more reasonable amount of time.
Is there alternative, if we were not to agree with that analysis, is there alternative relief that the petitioner would seek?
The alternative relief, at the very least, I checked with my office this morning. This case has not even been assigned to a board member for adjudication. It is truly languishing. At the very least, this court should order the board to send it to a board member for adjudication. I would say that just like in the Mathis case, I would discourage the court from that, although that would be the alternative relief. I would discourage the court from that because in the Mathis case, a case very similarly situated to Mr. Gray's, and I recognize that as a single-judge decision and not precedential, but it is has some persuasive effect, I would hope, and that the remedy there was to adjudicate it in 45 days, and I would urge the court to do that for Mr. Gray. But at the very least, get him to a board member.
Thank you. So in terms of the harm, the delay inflicted on Mr. Gray, our rough estimate is at least 600 cases in a one-year period jumped ahead of him under the old policies. His appeal has been pending for longer than that. Have you done any calculations as to how many cases you think may have jumped ahead of him in the remainder of the time that his appeal has been pending?
We have discussed that very question, Your Honor, in all honesty. I do not know the answer to that. It has to be many more. One can extrapolate that it's many more. Given the timeline of this case, this is the FOIA that we filed. These are the cases that we were able to unearth in the months that this case was pending. I am sure that the Secretary's counsel is better situated, frankly, than I am to answer that question. I have to imagine, to address Your Honor's question, that it has to be many, many more. I don't know the depths of the board's actions.
Have you done any calculations as to how many days or months Mr. Gray's case may have been delayed, given that the board issues almost 100,000 decisions a year, so probably hundreds of decisions a day? So how long of a delay are we talking about here in terms of Mr. Gray's case?
Given what the Secretary has articulated as the standards, I don't know. I'd have to do some math to figure out the hundreds. But in the petition in chief, and in our first response, we articulated how many days over the averages, at least, or the medians that the Secretary has proposed that he is, and it is substantial. It's hundreds of days.
Thank you,
Mr. Stoltz. As far as a remedy. In the military, if you're an officer on for promotion purposes, they put you on a lineal list. You know, all captains are numbered 1 through 5,000. And as you move up the lineal list to being promoted to major, you stay in lockstep order, unless you're passed over for promotion, and then the people below you leapfrog over you. As a court-martial punishment, however, you could directed an officer lose numbers, lose 500 numbers. In other words, they get punished by the fact that they won't get promoted as soon as they would otherwise. So 500 people jump them on the list. Couldn't this court do something similar and order that Mr. Gray be moved up on the lineal list? by a certain number of days, perhaps, if we could somehow figure ballpark how many days he was delayed, that he should then move up to be placed almost as if his docket number, docket date, was further in the past.
Yes. The court would have that power and discretion. The court has that power and discretion. So the answer to Your Honor's question is yes. My hesitation about it is I'm trying to think of how the court practically could do that. It is difficult, and this case makes very clear, in my mind at least, that it is difficult to understand how the board is working these cases. If Your Honor and the court were to be able to figure that out, I do think that would be a remedy that is possible to provide.
I mean, that would approximate making him whole, if you will.
Yes, and would perhaps get around Judge Meredith's stated concern about people just like Mr. Gray and whether they will line jump. But with so many board members, and my understanding is that the board is on a rapid pace of increasing staff members, one hopes, and as somebody who represents more than Mr. Gray, one hopes that should that happen, the board would be able to adjudicate these relatively quickly and stop the 4 and 5 and 6 years delay that they're currently experiencing.
Now, you're here before a panel, and you seem to be arguing just straightforward application of the track factors merits relief. Maybe we need to distinguish Ramsey. Besides distinguishing Ramsey, is there anything that this court can do in a precedential nature to take care of the problem that this petitioner has?
The problem that this petitioner and others, recognizing that I'm before a panel who will announce law that we're going to have to live with, recognizing that the court could articulate a standard. I would urge the court and ask the court to distinguish from Ramsey, because it's been a long time since Ramsey and we now have the track factors. But the board should be able to articulate a valid reason for why it is that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of veterans that are line jumping and why it is they're going out of docket order before they are able to come in and prove that this is, before they can level the accusation against a veteran that he or she is line jumping, which is a common accusation, as Your Honors are aware, in a writ petition type of context for why they get the leeway that they do.
They seem to say that hearing cases, resolving hearing cases before non-hearing cases is a valid reason for taking cases out of lineal order. Is that improper? Are you arguing that it's improper for them to have done that?
There is some leeway in 38 U.S.C. 7107 that contemplates the hearing, a hearing lane. I don't quite understand whether hearing cases are delayed more or being worked faster. That seems to change occasionally from the board. I do know, and in fairness to the board, I do know that they're juggling two systems at once. They've got the AMA docket. They've got the legacy docket. Of course, Mr. Gray falls under that legacy docket. I do understand that they have to move the hearings along. The hearings may comply with 38 U.S.C. 7107. The board's been doing it for a very long time, to answer Your Honor's question. And it certainly, on its face, is understandable. I'll be honest, I don't really understand if they're working those first, working them last, and how that could have possibly affected Mr. Gray.
It might be better to ask the Secretary's counsel this, but I'll give you a shot at it, too. When we're assessing wait times, where's the most accurate data? Is it the annual reports, the website? Where?
I cannot answer Your Honor's question as far as the most accurate, because I truly do not know. What we use, what my office, who represents a lot of veterans, uses, is the annual report, and we rely on their website. It's a public website. One hopes that that's accurate information. We rely as advocates on the annual report, on some combination of the annual report, the board's website, and occasionally the public statements of the chairman and vice chairman. Somewhere in that mix, you can get a relatively, I think, good picture of how the board is doing its very difficult job.
I have a follow-up to Judge Falvey's question. The petition and subsequent responses focus largely on historical data rather than the data that is available on the website, the VA website. Why would you compare it to the historical data from 2021 rather than looking at the data, the FY22 data that's available that clearly shows that overall it's taking the agency a longer time between certification of appeal to decision?
Yes, Your Honor, and I recognize that the more current data does absolutely show that. The reason for the dates picked, at least from our perspective, is that showed in the time in which we've been litigating this particular petition, that was the relevant time period. I recognize that the numbers have been updated since the fiscal year's new beginning on October 1st, but it's what we determined to be the most relevant to demonstrate Mr. Gray's position in conjunction with people of similar docket numbers. It's the data point in time that we picked to demonstrate why there was no line jumping in this case. But yes, it is a very, very long time that veterans are waiting.
Why wouldn't the opposite be true, that a clearer snapshot would be actually the current data that's available for the FY22 in light of the increased time overall?
I would say that it is a factor to consider, that the court can consider. I would, if I am remembering what Your Honor is talking about on the website, that's total time, if I'm remembering right, and I hope I'm speaking to the website that you are referring to, that's total time. We're also trying to put Mr. Gray and explain what Mr. Gray is for a case coming straight from the regional office. And my understanding, at least of the numbers that I think Your Honor is referring to, that's everything. That's remanded cases. That's cases that have been, you know, up and back from the regional office. I think that's total amount of time. I don't know that it speaks specifically to Mr. Gray's case coming up the ladder.
Well, not including remand cases, the numbers have increased. The dates, the number of days have increased.
Yes, Your Honor.
According to the website, from certification of appeal to decision to 1,196 days. So again, unless I'm mistaken, and obviously the Secretary's counsel will have an opportunity to address this, but unless I'm mistaken, that's closer to apples and apples, not including remand cases.
The board absolutely missed its targets last year for board decisions. I think it was off by almost 20,000. And so that is a factor. That is a board delay. Despite getting more money, despite getting more resources, they missed. And so that does factor into Mr. Gray's delay. There is no doubt about that. But what we hoped to provide in our pleadings was a snapshot of where he is relative to people with docket numbers after his. And that's why we chose those dates and those numbers.
Thank you.
I see I've got the yellow light. Is there any further questions?
I have another question. So that number that Judge Lauer just gave you, the 1,196 average days mm-hmm. to ADC, average days to completion, I guess, maybe?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
ADC, what's that, average days to completion?
Uh-huh.
So certification date to decision date. If Mr. Gray had to wait 1,196 days, that would be next August 2023. So he seems on track to...
From his VA-9, my math has it that he, from the date of his VA-9, which he certified on Christmas Eve of 2018, so 12/24/18, to today's date is 1,416 days. And so he would still be a very long time from certification or from his Form 9. It would be 1,416, which I believe, if I understood, if I heard Your Honor correctly, it is still longer than the time... similar, but I'm not sure that I'm not sure we're comparing apples to apples, so I don't want to overstep.
Well, it talks in terms of measuring it from the certification date to the decision dispatch date or the issue date being 1,196 days. And Mr. Gray's certification date is not until 5/12/20, right?
I have the docketing date is 5/24/20.
Okay, so the 1,196 days from then would be August 21st, 2023. So, at least from that measure, he doesn't seem to be beyond the norm of to extent you look can trust averages.
And that's what makes averages difficult that's what makes averages a difficult standard. That's why it was our hope. And the averages are the averages. And the court can certainly weigh that. That's part of the track factors. That is what courts look at is average time.
Right.
I would really urge the court, and that's why we went through the exercise of FOIAing these numbers and taking a look at those cases that are similarly situated to Mr. Gray. There's no doubt that the board is suffering. I don't think that there's any dispute that the board is suffering delays that no one likes, including the board.
It seems there's two different arguments that could be made. One is that there's an unreasonable delay, you know, track factors, but the other is unlawfully withheld because they're treating cases outside of lineal order. But on the unreasonable delay one, if the median or average number of days under the 2021 annual report was 2015, I think. That's from Form 9 to board disposition. If there is a decision by August 21st, 2023, that will be 1,700 days. So, again, by comparison to that metric, at least, it looks like Mr. Gray's case is processing according to norms, undermining maybe the unreasonable delay argument, but the line-jumping argument, that doesn't resolve, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Correct. I completely agree with Your Honor's analysis.
I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel, you have three additional minutes if you need them.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Court should deny the petition for two reasons. One, petitioner has not met his burden to show that he is entitled to a writ because he has not shown that his appeal at the board has been unreasonably delayed compared to similarly situated claimants. Second, the remedy petitioner seeks cannot be provided by this court without potentially knowingly violating a congressional mandate. For a little context with Mr. Gray's appeal, Mr. Gray filed his VA Form 9 on December 24th, 2018. His VA Form 9 was one of 5,669 VA Form 9s received by VA in December of 2018 alone. In all of 2018, 62,832 VA Form 9s were received. When Mr. Gray's case was transferred to the Board of Appeals, it was one of 156,758 cases received by the Board that year alone. Since then, the Board has issued 287,678 decisions. Mr. Gray asserts that because he was not one of the nearly 300,000 decisions issued during that time frame, that his case has been unreasonably delayed. It has not been. Yet he asked this court to prioritize his individual case above those similarly situated claimants and order the board to issue a decision by a date certain. Petitioner has not met his burden to show that he's entitled to such relief, and if he could possibly reach that high standard, he seeks a legally impossible remedy because it asks this court to order the board to knowingly violate 7107. Petitioner does not and has not alleged that he falls in with one of the statutory or regulatory priorities to be advanced on the board's docket. yet he seeks that treatment simply by the filing of a writ. He has not shown special circumstances that justify the issuance of this writ that would prioritize him over similarly situated claimants awaiting a board's decision. Moreover, his requested remedy fails to take into account that this court has long held that it will not set arbitrary deadlines or date certain for the board to issue decisions. In 2001, when this court was advised by the Federal Circuit to do just that and set a deadline, the court declined, recognizing the administrative obligations and priorities of the agency trumped. It found that requesting such information, even to determine where that claimant was on the timeline, would be intrusive, and to so far state that it would be wrong to impose such a date certain on the board. More recently, in all but one non-precedential order, the court has recognized the mandate of Congress in 7107, noting if the court was to issue such a writ, it would potentially breach the congressional mandate set by 7107. Here, unfortunately, it is just not simply Mr. Gray's time in line for his case to be worked. Regarding the board's docket, to ensure efficient, timely, and fair decisions, Congress has directed 7107 to direct the board to consider, work, and decide cases in regular docket order. This court found that Congress did not intend 7107A1, now A4, to be limited to strict chronological order. Rather, the board must consider no less than 12 statutory or regulatory requirements that dictate the adjudication of claimants on appeal. Petitioner has identified 1,043 cases decided by the board that he asserts show that his case was delayed, and also to vitiate the concern about line jumping. However, if we look at that number and remove the cases that are considered by statute or regulation, that number decreases to 620, which compared to all the cases decided by the board in fiscal year 22 is 0.6% of all cases decided. That means the margin of error of working cases out of docket order is less than 1%. For the second largest government in the agency, that margin of error seems pretty reasonable. When looking at those cases itself, now if we were able to take away the hearing cases, as counsel has admitted that 7107 does allow flexibility for hearing cases, we are looking at less than potentially, sorry, let me restructure my math. We are looking at only 400 cases that had other sort of policy procedures in place in order for them to be adjudicated at the time that they were adjudicated. If we were to go to that 50 cases that are unaccounted for, whether it be human error, a technological glitch, some sort of reason that caused 50 cases to be decided out of sequential order, that is less than a day's work for the board. That means that Mr. Gray's case, with looking at these numbers, has only been delayed less than a day. Looking at what the court has, what the board has done in the past fiscal year, looking at those statutory and regulatory requirements, two-thirds of the cases inventoried by the board were either statutorily required to work prior to Mr. Gray's case. They were either AOD cases, which were advanced on the docket due to age or health concerns. They were either 7112 remands from this court that immediately get priority and jump in front of any other cases needed to be worked, or they are cases remanded for the agency of original jurisdiction that remain in docket order. Two-thirds of the board's inventory was that. A third was the original dockets that Mr. Gray falls under, including the other 2018 docket numbers. So the docket number before Mr. Gray and the docket number after Mr. Gray. Those are the similarly situated veterans. Those are the ones that are still waiting decisions based on the numbers that are shown by the metrics. And the Secretary acknowledges that any delay or any perceived delay is frustrating to an individual claimant, but that individual's frustration must be balanced against the statutory, regulatory, and policy obligations the agency has to all claimants.
Counsel, as you know, last week VA submitted two affidavits from the Deputy Vice Chairman of the Board and outlined several policies that VA was using and that have now been changed, including prioritizing hearing cases, prioritizing complex or rare cases, cases where there was an amended docket number. Why were those policies changed if they weren't inappropriate?
To answer your question, Your Honor, they weren't so much prioritized. They were efficiencies that were created. The SCT program, the specialty case program, was created, I believe, in 2017, and the One Touch program was created in 2018. They were efficiencies that were created in order to try to get cases out the door a lot faster. The specialty case team has not been changed. It has not been disbanded. It is still in place. It is now, however, the board's complete distribution of cases has changed with the merger of AMA cases and legacy cases into one case distribution. So all cases are now being distributed from a central location. So the SCT cases will be distributed from that central location. It is not that it has been disbanded. The ones
they were taking cases in advance of cases like Mr. Graves.
They were. The operating procedure, though, however, directed that they should not have been doing that. The operating procedure was. So it is more so human error, as the cases were being distributed manually, that they were either out of docket range or the median docket range or decided. But the intent of the program was not that they would be distributed outside of the working docket range that the board was using. So that is now going. The specialty case team now has been moved into the case distribution system. The same thing with the One Touch program. The One Touch program, the SOP did state that they were supposed to be worked in regular docket order, but those are hearing cases. They are assigned per where the hearings are assigned. They're assigned where the hearings are held by the judges that are held. And these judges, when they decided to have a hearing, could One Touch them and then move them. I will say that the One Touch program had a 70% grant rate. That means veterans were getting cases that were granting benefits immediately as opposed to being redocketed and waiting for their time. So there was some success. The One Touch program was set to sunset. It just so happened that it happened at the end of fiscal year. So with the case distribution and the merging of that and the simplification of how cases were being distributed and the focus on hearing cases in the past few years, because there was such a delay on the hearing cases, the program was set to sunset. The fiscal year has ended. The new fiscal year has started. That procedure went with the fiscal year.
So in terms of the delay, to Mr. Gray, you acknowledged that about 600 cases may have jumped in front of him in the line. The FOIA data that we have is for a one-year period of when his case has been pending. Do you have an estimate of how many cases may have jumped in front of him based on those policies for the remainder of the time that his case has been pending?
No, Your Honor, I do not have that. We were focused on the cases that were identified by petitioner in preparing for this. And again, just to clarify, it's not so much that they were priorities or jumped in line. It just so happened that they were part of these efficiencies that were decided as part of these programs, and that they were worked first. It's not that there was an intentional jumping in line. It's not that there was anything nefarious going on here. It was simply that these policies and procedures, these efficiencies to get more decisions out the door, were there was human error that allowed some of these cases to get. And we're looking at, if we look at the One Touch program, it's less than two cases per VLJ that were decided out of error.
You mentioned that you thought these, if they were inappropriately jumped ahead of Mr. Rainline, that it would only have delayed his case by a couple of days. Can you give us context for that? Approximately how many decisions does the board issue in a given day?
In a given, we can extrapolate. I know on average a week is 1,800. So we're looking at about 350 a day, 360. And I apologize, that is estimate my math. I'm not exactly the greatest on math. But I do know the number is 1,800 for the week.
And so in terms of where is the petitioner's case now, can you give us an idea of how many legacy appeals are currently pending at the board and how many of those would you consider to be ahead of Mr. Gray in the queue?
So at this exact moment, I cannot tell you Mr. Gray's case is in line, and that is because of the fluidity of the docket order. Every day, the docket changes. This argument can end, and the docket could have changed from the moment that I walked in here.
Even as of today, you can't tell where he is?
Correct, because the cases come in.
At a point in time, it's not changing every single moment.
It depends on the cases that come out. So take this court, for example, and it's on January 1st, if Mr. Gray was number two to be worked, and this court issued every single remand that this court issued in the fiscal year 22, which is about 7,500, 7,700. We'll take the 7,500 number. On January 2nd, Mr. Gray would be 7,502. And then on January 3rd, if 100 veterans turned 76, Mr. Gray would then be 7,602.
So you're acknowledging that you can determine where he is on any particular day.
At this moment in time, probably if I was to call the board today, they probably could give me an estimate. But it could change as of the next hour from here because other cases could be transferred to the – so it's minimal, it has minimal importance as to the exact spot at any given point in time in reference because of how fluid it is and how quickly it does change.
So can you give us – I'm not sure I heard the answer to the how many legacy appeals are there currently pending at the board?
I believe – thank you. Hold on. It is – about 200, I will have to double check that exact number, but I want to say it is still roughly around 200,000.
And can you tell from the data that you have what's the oldest appeal that's trying to get an original decision like Mr. Gray?
That information I do not know.
Is it available?
I would have to ask the board that.
Okay, so in terms of how does Mr. Gray get to the front of the line if we change these policies. Now the board is adjudicating cases where advance on the docket goes first, court remands go first, and then everybody else in terms of the date of their substantive appeal. How does Mr. Gray get to the front of the line? Can you do the math for us? What needs to happen for him to ever get a decision?
His date and time has to come up.
But are there always going to be cases that are higher priority than his case?
Based on the statutory and regulatory requirements, probably, Your Honors.
So it's possible he will never get a decision.
That is not correct, Your Honor. This is
the math for us. How does he get a decision?
I will say that it's the time concentrated problem because all legacy cases will have been at a functional zero, or it is the intent of VA to work all legacy cases to a functional zero by the end of fiscal year 23. So Mr. Gray will, because he is a legacy case, fall within that work down, that drawdown as we merge to the AMA period. So no matter what the intent is for all legacy appeals, Mr. Gray included, to be done by fiscal year 23 with the original decisions that they are being issued. So while I cannot give an exact date when Mr. Gray will get a decision, functionally all legacy cases will have been worked by the end of fiscal year 23.
How can you say that if you just acknowledge that there might always be a case that's higher priority? You're not distributing some portion of priority and some portion of non-priority. If you're always going first with priority cases, how can you assure us that he will get a decision?
Unless the priority cases completely even out to the amount of regular original cases, and those numbers probably will not add up if you look at the two-thirds and the one-third working process, there will always be original claims being worked.
Two-thirds.
Because last year, two-thirds were the priority cases that were decided by the board. A third of them were original claims, including original claims, legacy claims coming through. So there are always cases being worked that do not fall within one of the priorities. It just depends on a given day or a given year how many of them are before the board.
Let my colleagues jump in, but I have one more I'm going to ask at this point. What's the percentage of cases now being distributed that are legacy versus AMA cases?
I will apologize, Your Honor. I did not investigate the AMA. I was focused on we were focusing specifically on the legacy cases. According to the data that I'm reading from the board's website right now, it looks like 20 to 30% of cases decided are filed under the AMA.
Thank you.
What is the best source of data? If we're looking at wait times, the mm-hmm. best sort of data is the annual reports or the website?
So right now, as of today, I guess if you're going to look at it, the current metrics and how it changes, the website was updated. So it continues to update based on the current statistics. The annual report obviously looks at the entire report, right, or the entire year, excuse me. So if we were looking at a point in time as to metrics, the website. If we were looking at the year as a whole and how the work was done for the year, the annual report.
And so the website's updated constantly?
I believe so, yes, Jerome.
Help me understand some of these wait times then. One of the measures on the annual report is from AOJ receipt of Form 9 to certification to the board. And in 2021, it said it was 228 days. Mr. Gray waited 505 days for that. From board receipt of certified appeal to docketing, or was formally placed the appeal on the docket, is 358 days, but Mr. Gray, it only took 12 days. Any sense of why that would be such a short period? It was May 12th to May 24th, after having taken double the amount of time for the first metric.
No, Your Honor,
And then the next metric is docketing of certified appeal to decision issued, 260 days, yet Mr. Gray is now at 899 and counting.
Are those Your Honor, those are average days. So
yeah.
Those include AOD dates. They include the priorities. They include remanded cases as well. So the expedited cases and the AOD cases, they're naturally going to bring the numbers down, the average days, because obviously AOD cases can be worked within the 12 days or 10 days of being. So you're looking at average.
So these numbers aren't just initial appeals, no remands, no hearing.
If it's from the annual report and it's talking about averages, then no, I believe it includes all cases that were before the board during that year.
And Mary, I think you're not supposed to aggregate those three numbers, but if you do aggregate them, it comes up with 846 days on average. And Mr. Gray is at 1416 and counting.
Again, that would be the average. So you're also looking at the AOD cases that are worked almost immediately and some of the expedited cases.
So that's that 2/3, 1/3 distinction.
Correct. Yes.
A couple more. Mr. Stoltz isn't arguing for strict adherence to the lineal ordering, and certainly the secretary and the board are to be applauded for various innovations and efficiencies and programs to try to move cases as fast as possible. So I don't think anyone's interested in strict adherence. But what are we to do? You say the remedy he's seeking we can't grant. What are we to do when a petitioner is, whether it's you consider it unreasonable delay or unlawfully withheld because of the 600 or 400 or 50 people who line jumped him, what would be an appropriate remedy?
Unfortunately, Your Honor, I do not believe there is a remedy here to be given.
What about my idea about the lineal list and just ordering him be moved some number of numbers on or dates on the lineal list?
I think that breeds
give him a constructive docketing date.
I think there are two issues with that sort of remedy. One is the lineal list is so fluid, we don't know exactly where the lineal list would be. And two, it potentially penalizes veterans.
Same line jumping problem.
So you'd have the same line because the veteran right before Mr. Gray and the veteran right after Mr. Gray haven't filed petitions. So they're on the same line, they're at the same train station waiting to get on the train to get a decision.
So even if this were a class action of all similarly situated appellants. There's not a remedy we could grant to the class of similarly situated people. Is that what you're saying?
At least not pled here today, no, because it would be then move that entire class up against the ones in front of
the non-class
behind
members.
It, the non-class members. So here,
you know, that you could kind of understand why it's not a very satisfactory answer.
Yes, I understand, Your Honor.
There's a problem here, and you're telling me there's no remedy.
For this particular veteran in this particular case, yes, unfortunately, there is no remedy. But that is why there are the track factors for balancing for cases that do come up where there is some sort of egregious.
What about the argument that rather than it's unreasonable delay, that his action on his case has been unlawfully withheld by the line jumping?
Your Honor, I don't think that has been pled. I don't think that has been here. But if we look at that, it's not being unreasonably held. If the board is not working,
unlawfully withheld. You've acknowledged that there's at least some appellants who jumped him in the line inexplicably, at least 50,
at
right?
Least 50, yes. Most likely human error, so mostly or calculating error. There was no intent to advance anyone's person. We're not prioritizing anyone's cases here. It was just so that they were worked. The same thing, too, I think. If the board stopped issuing cases and no cases were being worked, I think then we would probably have an unlawfully withheld action. But here, there's still 96,000 cases coming from the board in the last year. They're still working cases, 1,800 a week. So they are working. They are working towards Mr. Gray. Unfortunately, it is very slow. And everyone has recognized how slow this process is. It's why the legacy system is going away and the AMA system is taking over. Because of these competing statutory and regulatory obligations, the policy obligations, it was recognized that it's slow. It is being worked out. Unfortunately, Mr. Gray is still waiting because of those considerations.
Thank you.
Counsel, help the court here. When we're looking at potential considerations for relevant board metrics.
Yes.
There's a number of ways to look at it, right? And the parties have proposed different things to look at. You can go from the filing of the Form 9. You can look at certification. And these are all to decision. Docketing. So what is the Secretary's position as to which we should be looking at when considering whether the delay has been unreasonable and what data should we give weight to?
So I would recommend and advise that the court look at the date that the VA Form 9 was filed, because that is the date in which the board dockets the cases. So that is when, and that is actually going to be continued with the case distribution into AMA. So where there's no VA Form 9 in AMA, there is a 10-182, and the date of the 10-182, which grants the jurisdiction to the board, is the document that the board will be using then. The same thing with the VA 9. The VA 9 form grants the jurisdiction to the board, where the appeal goes to the board. So I would advise that the VA Form 9 is the correct date to use, because that is when the appeal is filed with the board.
To decision?
To decision, yes.
And then the second part of my question was, what data should we be considering? As I asked Mr. Stoltz, the petitioner would like us to look at historical data. There's also current data available, at least for FY22 now. The annual report, I don't think, has been released, but what's the Secretary's position there?
Given the fact that the data that we've looked at here is current, the Secretary would most likely look at the current, because that is the current processing of it's what the board is doing now. So it is considered, it has, you know, if we look at the One Touch program has sunsetted. So if you look at the current data at this point in time, it is what the board is currently doing. It is the most reflective of the board's operations as we speak today. So the Secretary would say to look at the most current data, which would be currently from the board's website.
Did you go?
Thank you.
Could I just ask you a couple of technical-type questions on there was a number of references in all of these pleadings to a number up to September 2019 on VA's website. And there was an affidavit, I think the deputy referred to that as a median number of the cases that are in the queue, I think. Could you explain to us what the significance is of that up to number, and does it how it relates, if at all, to what cases are currently being distributed to board members for decision?
So I believe at this point in time that metric is no longer being used. So it as of September 2002, it is no longer using the median date. But that median date, again, looked at all of the dockets that were going out, including AOD cases and the expedited remand cases. So if there are cases being distributed in 2019 for decisions, if there are cases being distributed in 2022, if there was an AOD case for distribution, it was the average date that decisions going out at that time. So it was being distributed up to that point in time in cases. Case distribution means it was moved from essentially the docket line to a judge to be distributed for attorneys to review. So those were the cases up to docket 2019 at that point in time. Some were being worked. It ranged between those numbers. It does not mean that cases were eligible at 2019 or September 2019 to be worked. It just that was the median date of cases of all cases across the board that was being worked that were being worked.
The deputy also referred to a term working docket range.
Yes.
Can you explain to us what that is? If it's different than what you just described?
It's not different. It's just the fact that since the board is distributing so many cases at one given time, it includes the cases that are being distributed up to the judges for distribution for decisions.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions.
I'm just curious, you may or may not know the answer to this, that at some point after this court issued the Mathis decision,
yes.
There was a change made to the data that was available, the metrics online, to actually provide less concrete data. Do you know why that decision was made?
No, Your Honor, and I was unaware of that change, so no. I apologize.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, the Secretary asks that the petition be denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm grateful for independent judicial review today because the writ process, the importance of the writ process has been made even more apparent today. I would urge this court to not accept the Secretary's explanation that he and the board can basically change the docket around to a point at which Mr. Gray and similarly situated veterans that apparently are not chosen to be on a specialty case team, are not chosen to be in one touch, or are not chosen to be in whatever docketing situation the board is trying out that month. There would be no oversight into that process without this. And the answer should not be that Mr. Gray will get a decision when he gets a decision, and someday the legacy backlog will be cleared. There has to be some compliance with 38 U.S.C. 7107 and the congressional dictate to work cases in docket order. The reason for that is to stop the kind of moving around that the board could be doing without this dictate from Congress. I appreciate, and I'm sure Mr. Gray appreciates, and I'm sure that veterans appreciate, that the Secretary has taken a mitigating response as of the first part of this fiscal year to either amend or stop some of these programs, which they admit led to invalid line jumping. And I would ask this court to please articulate a standard that the Board of Veterans Appeals should work these cases in a reasonable docket order without an allowance for invalid line jumping and invalid delays. Thank you, Your Honors.
You're not suggesting that they have no ability to be flexible in the sense of the efficiencies that Ms. Krall suggested. You know, shouldn't we be encouraging innovation to move things faster?
Not if that innovation leads to human error, mistakes in a situation in which, as Judge Meredith pointed out, and I tend to agree with, frankly, Mr. Gray could just be in a position where he'll never get a decision. We don't know. The secretary and the board cannot answer with any degree of specificity when he's going to get a decision. It's been 4 years. It's a lot longer for a lot of other veterans, and it's a very long time. But the answer provided today is the writ's not appropriate. The writ's never appropriate, apparently, which cannot possibly be the answer. There is a system for filing petitions for a writ. And Mr. Gray, if he's not ripe to have this court review the delay that he has suffered today, he'll never be ripe. It will never be time for this court to oversee what it is the board is up to. Of course the board has discretion to do this, and of course the board has, it's been said many times, I think it is agreed to, the board has a very gargantuan task. That is why it is getting more funding, that is why people are so concerned with it, veterans advocates, VA itself, et cetera. But the answer can't be, because it's a hard job, they can move dockets around and articulate programs and then take them away without validity and suffer some of this human error. The answer can't be that they get to do that all the time to where a veteran just may never get a decision or will whenever the legacy is over. That's too far of a pendulum swing. It needs to swing more back into the track factors, and the court should examine it for whether this was reasonable. And if it was not reasonable, a petition either for a decision to be granted or for his case to be assigned to a board member, or to your point, Judge Falvey, that something needs to be done about the docket order and about these similarly situated veterans who have clearly been jumped by these programs that apparently have been ended, some order to that effect so that there are some guardrails in place for America's veterans that are stuck with the Board of Veterans Appeals.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted for consideration, and we will come down and greet counsel.